Mark Adams. I am from Tacoma, Washington. I am thoroughly retired from Washington State University, retiring from there in 74. I was on the faculty, but I didn't have any formal classes. I was full-time research, but it wasn't that diddly little research that you think of up against a bench. I was in the Division of Industrial Research, was doing research for industry in the state, the same as the Ag Extension does for the agriculture. So I got to see and do a lot of things and work with industry, and I continued to do that and still am doing industrial consulting. But this time I have to dig back a little bit and get my plastic hat on. I'm a member of the Science and Technology Committee and have been since 1978. And there's nothing more challenging than trying to apply your scientific knowledge to the problems of Holden Village. No, not problems, challenges. There is no such a thing as a problem. I'm going to try to cover in two sessions the subject of, in a general way, of municipal solid waste, and in little more detail, very little, the part that plastics play in our municipal solid waste. So this first session will be dealing with, in the beginning, and a word about plastics general, so that you know that that's what we're working with, and then municipal solid waste, and answering the question, what is it? And then we will speak in very general terms at this point about the waste management. And then tomorrow evening at the same time, it will be over at Koinonia in the fireside room, we will speak about the six major plastic families, and then do a little work on source reduction, on recycling, on incineration, and on landfilling, and then a few comments on the boo-boos that some of the environmental groups have accomplished, such as biodegradable and the elimination of styrofoam. And then we'll try to whip up a little summary. But first, in a session at Holden Village, we're supposed to start out with a reading from the Bible, and that I will do. And I suspect that most all of you are going to be able to fit it into this year's theme, in the image of God. As you look around and realize the omnipotence of God, everything that you see and feel is the image of God. In the beginning, Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and the darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. And I run into a problem I ran out of big print, so I'm going to have to go elsewhere. And I did paraphrase it a bit. We have the first day taken care of. On the second day, God said, "Let there be a firmament to separate the waters above from the waters below." And God called the firmament heaven. On the third day, God separated the waters and let dry land appear and called the water sea and the land earth. Then God created all the plants of the earth, herbs, fruit, trees, grasses, you name it. On the fourth day, God said, "Let there be light in the firmament." And God created the sun for the day and the moon for the night and also the stars. On the fifth day, God said, "Let the water bring forth moving creatures that have life and fowl that fly above the earth and in the firmament." And then on the sixth day, God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creatures, cattle, creeping things, and beasts of the earth." And God said, "Let us make man in our own image, male and female, created he them." And about this time, he got pretty tired, so he said, "Hey, let's take a day of rest." But on the third, remember that was when he created the plants. On the fifth, created the fishes and the fowls. And on the sixth day of creation, God was very busy inventing, manufacturing, creating all manner of flora and fauna made up of millions of molecules in great chains and connected them together, the first plastics. And at this, and all of this creating generated the first municipal solid waste. And we today are mining the massive landfills for coal, oil, tar, natural gases, etc. And from these raw materials, quotes, essentially, all of the synthetic plastics that we find in our daily life has been created. In fact, as you're sitting on some of it right now, and obviously leaning against it, those have all been coated with a plastic material. A lot of plastics go into paints. And good heavens, look at all the different types of plastics you're wearing. Fibers, I would guess, maybe 50% of the clothes that we're wearing tonight are synthetic fibers. And copolymers of plastics and natural fibers, natural polymers. So we now know who started this all, and it's up to us to listen and find a way to keep it under control. That is the municipal solid waste. Now, a plastic is defined as a long chain organic compound with repeating forms. One of them would be a carbon with a carbon and would have hydrogen here and a hydrogen here and hydrogen here and hydrogen here, and then goes on and another carbon here, and this one has a nitrogen on it. And a hydrogen down here, and then it goes on. This is combined with another one, just like this one, and so it goes on and on and on. And someplace over against that wall will be the end of that particular chain. And then they get interconnected, cross-connected, and that's what makes it possible for a plastic to form a film. Now, if you really want to find out how to generate a plastic, I would be glad to help you out on this, but plan to spend at least a week. And that would be just one of the simple ones. Now, synthetic plastics, polymers are basically the same as the natural plastics. The natural ones that you have would fall into amber, for example, is a natural plastic that is formed from a tree, an exudate from a tree. Your skin is a good plastic. It holds you together. And the bark on a tree, it could fall into this same category. Anything that is repetitive in nature, as far as the molecules are concerned. So you see that plastics are as indigenous as we are. Now the beauty of the plastics is that because of the very nature of the structure, you have a limitless number of properties that you can generate by modifying the polymer slightly or putting another polymer into the chain, and that is what has happened. We have such a vast number of plastics. If we have a particular problem that needs to be answered, and that's the mother of invention, a problem, a challenge, then you're going to find somebody that says, hey, I know how to handle that one. And they will generate a new plastic. Or you're going along working on a particular problem that in the laboratory, and you're having a hard time getting the job done that you started out to do, but on the side there is this mass of gunk that you don't know what to do with. And it's that gunk that turns out to be the gold in your experiment. And this has happened so many times that you always look at everything that you have before you. Now, as I mentioned, all of the natural plastics, even the connective tissues, the tendons, these are all part of the plastic family. Now, by far the greatest number of synthetic plastics are formed, generated, invented from petroleum products, natural gas, oil, tar, and from coal, and the products that you can generate from coal. You also introduce into the picture some very nasty materials. For example, all of your acrylics, the ones that you use for making clear encapsulation materials, your clear film, clear windows, this type of thing, they formed by use of cyanide, combination of cyanide with the other organic materials, and your acetals, acetal resins, your acetates all have in their formation they've used formaldehyde, but once it is into the plastic, then it is not going to cause anybody any trouble. Until you try to dispose of it. The same way with chlorinated polymers. PVC, polyvinyl chloride, is ubiquitous material. You see it everywhere. Lying out here on the along the road, and a nice piece of pipe is some of your PVC. Your trays in the hospital are PVCs. Many of the harder throwaway wares in the hospitals are polyvinyl chloride, and these are great until you have to get rid of them. Then you can run into difficulties in the incineration process. We'll talk about that later. Many of the fibers and polymers you will recognize. Saran, that's that beautiful wrap that you can put over your dish and it'll stick there. Or it is also in thicker films. It's used for making tubing and such as that. Rayon. Rayon is made from wood pulp. By the time you get through into making rayon, you don't see any more wood or wood fibers. It has been dissolved and extruded and into a fiber, and so you have rayon. And acrylic fibers. Many of your rugs, very good rugs, are used made from acrylics, and they stand up right along with the wool for a fiber material. In the fiber class, of course, you've got in natural ones, wool and cotton and silk and flax. Flax for your linen. You'll find me stumbling for words every once in a while. After so many years, you know, you get to a point where you run out of storage space. Retrieval slows down. But that all makes for fun and life. And the plastics are can be separated into two general classes: thermoplastic and thermosetting resins. The thermosetting resins, such as what your whiteboard is made of here, is you can't melt that down. It won't melt. But you can take the plastic that's around my glasses, you heat that up a little bit, and you go blah, become a puddle. And there are certain types of plastics that, and this makes for real fun, and that is to take they used to have some lunch buckets made out of plastic, and you let those get hot, and they distort and everything, and then they have the habit of. If you warm it enough, it will try and does take its original form again. You can have a piece that has been curled up into a shape and warm it up and it'll flop right back into its original shape. And that would be your thermoplastic group. Now you use the thermoplastic resins can go into coatings, and also your thermosetic resins, your alkyds, which make some of your best coating materials. Epoxy come into this group. Urethanes. The urethanes, I'm still amazed and wonder about what you can do with the urethanes. And one of the properties is you can take a urethane paint and apply it underwater, and it works very nicely. You have the one that I haven't mentioned at this time, and one that is turns out to be quite obvious to everybody simply because of its one of its beautiful properties, and that's your polystyrene foam, styrofoam. Polystyrene is a very useful polymer, plastic. It goes into not only your foamed materials, but it goes into clear food containers. Some of your clear plastic glasses. The usually they're the thin ones that hardly get you by the first drink. And those will be polystyrene. And the ones that McDonald is still using, bless their hearts, is the clear plastic containers for their garden salads. Those are polystyrene. Incidentally, all of these things are recyclable. The styrofoam, that is a unique material. You take the styrofoam packing material. 1 cubic foot of water weighs 62.5 pounds. 1 cubic foot of your polystyrene packing material weighs 5 ounces. And you can take solid blocks of polystyrene. They use it for flotation for marinas, but they also use it as flotation, safety flotation within boats. They're protected by false walls in the boats. And that material is a lot of the bulk density of your packing material has to do with the separation between the particles. But in the solid block, a cubic foot will weigh about 1.8 pounds, as against 62.5 for water. So you see, it's a pretty light material, and I can't see why anybody would want to get rid of it. A word about municipal solid waste. We have to find out where plastics fit into this picture. I don't know whether it was Glenn or who gave us the pie description for getting at a comparison, but this represents $160 million tons of municipal solid waste per year. That's what we generate in the United States. That is made up, on the average, of
Nettles?
And that is 12.1%. This is volume. You've been reading. Well, no, I'm sorry. This, I should have mentioned that. This is by volume in this case. And we have then plastics. Constitutes 19.9%. Pardon me? They talk about the compression, that it takes up no more space than paper once it is compressed. But these percentage figures, nobody ever tells you exactly what they're talking about. Whether this is 19.9% including the several cubic feet of the styrofoam popcorn or what. But anyway, comes paper.
The number of 150 million tons of solid waste per year seems too low. Is that for the entire United States? Or
United States. United States. 34.1%.
Why does that number seem low? I don't remember, but I have to grab it.
In fact, is he's giving my secret away. Two % for glass. Where am I going to put the glass? And this is other, and it constitutes 31.9%. And this is made up of miscellaneous. In other words, what do you call it? Old rugs, I don't know. 8.2%. You have food waste. Which makes up 7.3%. And you have the yard waste coming in for the remainder of it, which is 16.4%. So you can look at that collection and see where you fit into the business of handling this municipal solid waste. There's been much discussion on the general categories that can be used for taking care of solid waste. One of them is, the first one, is source reduction. Second one, recycle. Third one, incinerate. And anything that's left over, bless you, you can landfill it. In the generalizations that I'm going through, we'll touch that lightly, but the incineration is usually, they right now they think about 75% everything gone together and incinerated, and 25% comes from a selected feed for the incinerator, with recycling, and even landfilling, handling that material that isn't a prime material for incineration. Particularly the 5% is, yes, very definitely used for fuel for electricity generation or steam generation for steam use. Now, let's do a little playing with this figure. That boils down to 3.5 pounds of municipal solid waste for you, me, everybody, including the baby, every day. Now let's have a look quickly at what 3.5 pounds of garbage looks like.
3.5 pounds per day.
3.5 pounds a day. This is about 3.5 pounds. What is it made up of? Of course, you got newspapers. That's something that is not biodegradable. It's not recyclable. What? You do? Great. I'm going to have to listen to you. Okay. This is some of the plastic. Here is the glass. That's what it looks like when it gets to be what they call cullet. It is recyclable. Of course, you better wear a pair of gloves. And maybe this would fit into that with the lid removed. And this is part of the plastic. This is going to be probably a high-density polyethylene. Or it could be polypropylene. These bags, boy, they're amazing what they can do. This one is reinforced with fibers. More, whoops, something else down in here. Everybody takes pictures. What do you do with them? Nobody wants down things. So save them until they overrun the place, then put them out in the plastic bin. Plastic film. There's all kind. Oh yes. These and Fritos. Man, what would we do without them? That was good last night. Hey, yeah. And we got plastic bottles. Those are worth money. Those are from polyethylene terephthalate. Have particularly good property, fairly thin material, and readily recyclable. And Vidal Sassoon. I don't know whether it comes off. I hadn't even checked this one. Uh-huh. This appeared in the garbage can out at the far end this morning. And there's nothing more frustrating than this one was probably made from recycled the PET material, and could even have some high density polyethylene in it. There's nothing on the bottle to indicate what it is. We'll get to that too before we get through. There's nothing more frustrating than junk mail. Everywhere is junk mail. So there is something we can do about that. Of course, there is about junk mail. It gives you a warm feeling. Somebody's thinking about you. But anyway, that I have the address here of the group. I believe it's in Washington. No, it's in New York. That you write to get this taken care of. It is the Mail Preference Service, Direct Marketing Association, 11 West 42nd Street, P.O. Box 3861, New York, New York, 10163-3861. And if you don't think to check with me here, it is on the posted in the post office by the window. And then you have your hard press magazines that you read and very quickly find a circular file for. And so that is part of your paper disposal system. Whoops. Oh boy. Gotta find some way of getting that so that I can get these out of here. This happens to be some of that beautiful packing material that you just can dump on and on. I understand that they have a whole attic full of it up here in the hotel if you want to take some home with you. Now, we still have the matter of metal. Aluminum cans. Those are worth what, 20 cents a pound? And so they're, economically, they're well worth recycling. This happened to be a top very rapidly torn off of one of the ice cream cartons in here. And that goes into the metal section.
Steel.
Yes, yeah. And of course, in the municipal solid waste, there'll even be parts of automobiles, broken jacks, a lot of bent fingers, and of course, the oil is part of the picture as well. But you notice that I didn't bring in any of the ripening garbage, food waste, or I didn't pick up any green grass. But that is all, and it forms quite a chunk of the residues. And occasionally, you throw away a polyester shirt. And that is part of the miscellaneous material up here. Now, you can look at this collection and then ask yourself, how much of that 3.5 pounds would disadvantaged, the homeless have? And then you start to think, oh my gosh, they don't have anything like that. That 3.5 pounds, I've got to take up some of that slack. So 3.5 pounds for you and me, it probably comes up to closer to 5 pounds for each day. Now, you can, without too much imagination, figure out how to reduce that amount of waste material. How much of it do we really need? One of the ways of cutting down on the bags, we all go to the grocery store, you can go ahead and use your plastic bags, but tell that supermarket to set up an arrangement where you can bring the bags back to be recycled. They'll handle that part of it. Or you can, in the same way, have them recycle the paper bags. But even better than that, have yourself a fishnet bag that you take along with you every day to the grocery store. Carry your stuff out. Don't use any of the extra packing. Of course, you can go to buying and all the stores. I believe I know that Fred Meyer's has bulk grain, bulk cereals that you can buy in bulk. But so much of this is attitude. How much of it can I get by without? In the long run, it's going to help you, going to cost you less to live, and it's going to change your attitude of how to live. Might even get you to thinking about, hey, poor Joe over here is going to need a little help. How can I do that? I have been standing up here talking away, and I'm sure there's one or two hands that would like to fly up. What do we got to talk about?
Can you tell us a little bit what you do with the styrofoam?
Okay, styrofoam in a place like Holden is a real enigma. Because on the barge, the space is at a premium, and so you don't go shipping out 10 pounds of styrofoam packing material that takes up about 40 or 50 cubic feet of space. You don't do that. This can be compacted. It can be compacted very simply, and I'll show you tomorrow what you can do with these little popcorns, with all of the polystyrene styrofoam material. You can reduce it in size by at least a factor of 10, and probably closer to a factor of 20 by a simple heating process. That takes a little bit of time, and I know you are, well, like me, that would reduce my couch potato time quite a bit. You can all find time for that. Yes, sir?
One way of getting rid of that, I seem to get a lot from the school and other packages with the popcorn.
Yeah. Says that it makes you feel good.
Thank you.
about the damage to the environment. And James says it's also, you have to be very careful to evaluate what your situation is to make sure that you're not damaging the environment more by doing a thing like recycling than you would be otherwise. And so that has to be looked at carefully. Well, what happens is that, for example, in some situations, like in my area, where we have a million people, population of a million people in the state here in Washington, if you recycle, and the recycling plant, for example, is in Albuquerque, or in Los Alamos, and that requires them the material that shut down the Albuquerque, then what you're looking at is the cost of gasoline to get it down there, the cost of pollution cost of getting it down there, and those are the trade-offs to the amount of pollution that you are creating by putting the landfill or some other way. And so,
yeah. I think if you pitted plastics, in many cases, against the economics of glass, that you'd find that the glass would win out. You never get a cut finger off a piece of plastic, but you can reuse that glass many times without doing anything to it except reuse it, clean it and reuse it. Well, this has been a real pleasure talking with you this evening. It's been rather bland as far as my presentation is concerned. So tomorrow night we'll see if we can't get you stirred up a bit. So you all have very comfortable seats, almost front seats for Vespers.